Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, toxic flow, Bloomingburg's ongoing battle with wastewater contamination. Radio Catskill reporter Marin Scotton reports on how the Bloomingburg Wastewater Treatment Plant has been discharging untreated wastewater up to 120,000 gallons daily into the Shawangunk Kill. Checking out the solar eclipse next month? Don't park on highways or gather at rest stops in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is one of the 13 states in the path of totality for the eclipse, and that's prompted officials in the Keystone State to issue safety guidance. We'll learn more from PennDOT. Plus, teen safety on tractors, a 4-H tractor program in Ulster County. And video game veteran Kari Toyama, who worked at Bungie and PopCap Games, two previous inductees into the Video Game Hall of Fame. First, the news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Korva Coleman. A federal appeals court will hold a hearing this morning about a controversial immigration law from Texas. The appeals court is blocking the law's enforcement. It would allow local Texas police to arrest people suspected of illegally crossing the border. Because of complex legal proceedings, the lower appeals court was able to block the law hours after the U.S. Supreme Court said it could take effect. Rebecca Rossman reports.
The surprise late-night ruling from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals means the measure known as Senate Bill 4 is once again on hold. SB 4's implementation was previously blocked last month after lawsuits by the Biden administration and immigrants' rights groups that called the bill discriminatory and unconstitutional. The measure would make unauthorized entry into Texas a crime and give police the power to arrest anyone suspected of illegally entering the country and deport them to Mexico. Mexico has said it would not comply with the law, quote, under any circumstances. For NPR News, I'm Rebecca Rossman.
President Biden and former President Donald Trump won several presidential primaries yesterday. These were in Arizona, Florida, Kansas, Illinois, and Ohio. Democrats in Florida did not hold a primary yesterday. Officials opted to award the state's Democratic delegates to President Biden. Alabama's lawmakers have passed legislation outlawing diversity, equity, and inclusion programs statewide. Kyle Gassett of Troy Public Radio says the bill now heads to Alabama Governor Kay Ivey for her signature.
Public schools and colleges in the state will be prohibited from maintaining DEI offices and programs and would be required to designate bathrooms on the basis of biological sex. The law says, quote, divisive concepts can be objectively discussed in classrooms as long as students are not required to assent to them.
Kyle Gassett reporting. Stocks opened lower this morning as investors wait to see what the U.S. Federal Reserve has to say about interest rates later today. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped nearly 35 points in early trading.
The Fed is almost sure to hold interest rates steady at today's meeting. What markets want to know is whether the central bank is still on track to start cutting rates later this year, and if so, by how much. In December, the average member of the Fed's rate-setting committee anticipated 3 quarter-point rate cuts this year. Since that time, inflation's remained a little hotter than forecasters had expected, which could make the Fed more cautious about lowering rates. Regulators in France have slapped Google with a $272 million fine. They say the company failed to live up to commitments to French publishers over the use of their news content. And it's hard to split a burrito 50 ways, but that's what Chipotle is doing with its stock. The company hopes to make the pricey shares more accessible. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down 33 points. The Nasdaq is down about 10. This is NPR. The FBI says that violent crime rates fell last year in large cities. The data show the rate declined 11%. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland has released a statement saying that in 2023, there were 13% fewer homicides overall. But a Gallup poll taken last year says that most Americans believe crime is rising. Experts who track crime rates say that perception is not true. A man from Washington State is accused of conspiring to kill bald and golden eagles and selling them on the black market. He's expected to enter a new plea in federal court today. NPR's Kristen Wright has more.
A grand jury indictment alleges Travis Branson traveled from Washington State to the Flathead Indian Reservation in western Montana to shoot bald and golden eagles. Branson is accused of illegally selling eagle feathers and other parts of the federally protected birds for significant sums of money across the U.S. and elsewhere. Prosecutors say law enforcement found the feet and feathers of a golden eagle in Branson's vehicle, in addition to text messages discussing transactions and plans to go on a killing spree for eagle tails. The indictment also alleges Branson and a second man, Simon Paul, killed more than 3,000 birds. There is an arrest warrant out for Paul. Kristen Wright, NPR News.
Major League Baseball's 2024 season opened today in Seoul, South Korea. The Los Angeles Dodgers beat the San Diego Padres 5-2. Police had to search the stadium. They discovered a bomb threat against Dodger star Shohei Ohtani. They say no suspicious objects were located. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at LodestarFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We'll get some safety tips for motorists in Pennsylvania who plan to view the solar eclipse next month. Here's a tip. Don't park on highways or gather at rest stops. But first, Radio Catskill reporter Maren Scotten has details about the Bloomingburg Wastewater Treatment Plant that's been discharging untreated wastewater up to 120,000 gallons daily into the Shawangunk Kill, a vital waterway flowing through Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan counties. The New York Department of Environmental Conservation says a sewage treatment plant in Sullivan County has discharged dirty wastewater daily for at least 15 months, stemming from challenges with non-biodegradable materials and operational failures within the treatment process, posing significant environmental and public health risks. Activists with a local conservation group say that private water samples taken last month show high levels of fecal matter and E. coli in the stream. Here's Maren Scott.
In January, a member of the Bashakill Area Association discovered that the village of Bloomingburg's wastewater treatment plant has been discharging an estimated 120,000 gallons of untreated wastewater every day into the Shawangunk Kill, which is the 47-mile stream that flows through Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan counties.
Now, if you were to do the math, 120,000 gallons per day means that every 8.5 days, they are discharging 1 million gallons. This problem is primarily due to the waste that's coming into their plant from their sewage collection system. And the problem is that the sewage contains a huge amount of what they refer to as rags, which have really been identified by numerous people as disposable and flushable baby wipes and diapers. Now, when this sewage enters the treatment plant, there is a part of the plant which is known as a swing arm. And the job of that swing arm is to grab all of that solid waste and pull it out so it cannot get into the plant proper. Well, it turns out that that swing arm has been inactive, and it's been inactive for a couple of years now. One of the last steps before they discharge is to put them through a filter system. Well, because they're still a significant number of these rags getting through, those filters get clogged up, causing more problems. So the two fundamental problems are, number one is that the arm was broken and they were struggling manually to try to keep up with these rags, but they were not successful in keeping up with them. And number two, these filters are being bypassed. And so there is this discharge that's going into the Shawangunk Kill. So we know that this was going on since about 2021, somewhere around there.
That's a representative from the Bashakill Area Association. who wished to remain nameless. When he discovered this information nearly 2 months ago, he and others at the Bashakill Area Association, also known as the BKAA, could hardly believe it.
This is a horrifying situation. It's bad enough that this happened at the plant. And believe me, we're sympathetic with the problem the plant is facing in that it's the sewage coming in that's really causing the problem. But the DEC has also known about this for 2 years at least. And yet nothing has been done to try to mitigate this problem. Now, I will tell you that just recently, I think it's about 2 or 3 weeks ago, the plant, the swing arm was repaired. It is back in action. Okay, to be fair to them. However, I will tell you also that it's not sufficient because the rags are still getting through.
The impacts of untreated wastewater going to the kill are still under investigation, but the BKAA has its suspicions. They recently collected water samples from the kill, and the samples contained extremely high amounts of E. coli.
At the wastewater treatment plant, you'll see that they are discharging more than 2,900 units into the water. Now, this is not a drinking water situation, but the limit for E. coli or coliform bacteria in drinking water is zero. But for swimming, the limit is 126. So you can see that this is a significant discharge into a stream that is used quite significantly by the population for trout fishing. So this is a very serious problem. You know, there are health implications potentially that could happen as a result of this discharge. And to be fair, you know, this is not the only plant that's ever discharged waters into fresh water within the state. It's more the length of time that this has been going on. That's what disturbs us the most.
For now, the BKAA is trying to mobilize their network of members to try and get some action from the Department of Environmental Conservation. As much as they want immediate steps to be taken, they are also trying to get to the root of untreated wastewater being discharged into public waterways so it doesn't continue to happen.
We sent in what we call a BKAA email alert out to our 800-plus members telling them about this problem and asking them to contact the DEC and express their dissatisfaction with this. So we've taken that action. We also have been investigating the root cause of the problem. So when we investigated the rag situation, we found out that the rag situation is not something unique to Bloomingburg. The rag situation with these flushable wipes and diapers is not only a national, but it's an international problem. So besides trying to protect the environment, we're also seeking a solution to the wastewater treatment plant's problem. How many days or years or millions of gallons of wastewater have to be disposed of in the freshwater before something gets done? You know, those are the things that disturb us the most.
That was a representative from the Bashakill Area Association on the impacts of untreated wastewater being dumped into the Shawangunk Kill. In Liberty, I'm Maren Scotton for Radio Catskill.
And the DEC says their enforcement is ongoing. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the solar eclipse is coming, and folks are getting prepared. But in Pennsylvania, if you're visiting, the state officials will not allow you to park on the roadways or rest stops. We'll find out more from PennDOT about safety guidelines for motorists and visitors to the Keystone State to view this once-in-a-lifetime event. This is Radio Catskill.
Catholic Charities Prevention Services has resources and supplies for youth, parents, and other community members that can help keep children and families safe. Medication trackers, lock bags, lock caps, medication destruction packets, and more. Learn how to be educated, involved, and active participants in the fight against drug and alcohol use. More information at cccsos.org or 845-794-8080. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
On the TED Radio Hour, when a city wants to be more walkable, they call urban planner Jeff Speck.
Interestingly, I work in a lot of red cities, Grand Rapids, Oklahoma City, where the local business leaders are saying, geez, how can we become more walkable so that we become more desirable?
Ideas for a more walkable world. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Pennsylvania is one of 13 states in the path of totality for the solar eclipse that's coming up next month. But if you're planning on checking it out while traveling in the Keystone State, don't park on highways or gather at rest stops. State officials have issued safety guidance for motorists and visitors viewing the event. And joining us now with more is Jill Harry from PennDOT. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Let's talk about why officials have said, listen, we're welcoming you to visit this solar eclipse. We know you're going to come, but don't park here.
Mm-hmm. It's just a dangerous thing for people to do. We want you to go to a place where you can get out of your car and enjoy it. We don't want you that. Well, we don't want that place to be along the highway.
Right. And there, you know, you're expecting a lot of people to come in, right? Is there an estimation of how many folks might be visiting?
In Erie County, we're expecting about 200,000.
And you're in Erie for PennDOT. And Erie is in one of those prime locations. And so you're definitely aware of one of the longest periods of darkness for the eclipse, but also so many people wanting to check it out. What are some of the precautions that folks in the state of Pennsylvania have been taking? I know that PennDOT has partnered with multiple agencies for safety information for visitors. What are some of the main messages you want to get out?
I think the most important thing is for people to be planning ahead. So don't be trying to figure out where you're going to go once you arrive. Have that destination in mind already, but also a couple of extra backup destinations because traffic could get very congested and you might not go or be able to reach the place that you really prefer. That's why we're really trying to spread that message about planning ahead because we don't want people to then have that scramble that leads them to just pulling over to the side of the road. Another important thing is to remember to turn your headlights on before the eclipse gets to totality. Because it will happen, you know, relatively quickly to some people if they're not prepared. So don't rely on your daytime running lights. Have your full headlights on and have them on before the totality hits. And then the last thing is to just be alert if you're in an area where there is a lot of people parking or stopping, that there's going to be a lot of pedestrians.
Yeah, and so the folks, you're not closing down highways or roads. We want to be clear about that. We're just advising folks that, you know, you're not going to be able to pull over or go to one of those rest stops because of safety issues, right?
That is correct. Erie County has a lot of great parks and other places where people can gather. The highway just isn't one of those spots.
And the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission is also saying they're keeping all lanes of traffic open, especially in Erie on I-79, and you'll have they'll have additional personnel.
Yes, a lot of the state agencies are also bringing in special personnel, so the state police, the DCNR for our state parks. So you're going to see a lot of people out there trying to help manage the traffic. Erie is the closest place for a lot of metropolitan areas, so Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia. We're expecting traffic coming over to our area from all of those.
You mentioned the state parks within the path of the total eclipse in Erie and Crawford counties. Are folks being advised to maybe go there, or are they allowed to go there? What's the status of being able to observe the eclipse from the state parks?
Oh, all of our state parks are open. So people can certainly go there. We anticipate they're going to be very full, though. So, again, that's where that planning comes into place. If you're not going to go to the state parks, where else can you go? Like, get on the website, check things out. Visit Erie has a great map that will help people identify all sorts of places where they can park and either walk somewhere to view it or view it right there from that parking lot. So there's a lot of options out there for people. Just plan ahead, and you'll have the best experience.
In addition to the hundreds of thousands of people expected to visit the state and the city of Erie to visit this, or to watch this event, there are about 435,000 Pennsylvanians who live in the path of totality for the eclipse. And folks are taking, making sure that folks that live there are being aware of that too. Even as simple as like running your routine errands might be impacted.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, it's a little more unique than some of the other states where the path goes through a large area for them. For Pennsylvania, we're just up here in the northwestern region, so we're expecting all of that traffic to come up to a very particular part of the state, which means the locals will have difficulty getting around. A lot of the local governments have already been asking them to stay home that day and view it from their backyards. Or to reschedule anything that you would typically do on a Monday. So you're going to see a lot of the schools up here are either doing a modified day or have canceled altogether. A lot of the doctor's offices and things of that nature have rescheduled all their elective appointments, and they're just trying to keep as many of the locals at home or just walking places, keep them off the roads. Again, it'll help everybody have a better experience.
Yeah, as I mentioned, PennDOT, along with the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, or PEMA, Pennsylvania State Police, Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission, and the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, all joining together to put these plans out and advise folks who live or travel in the Northwest region about this. And I think it's really important to, again, reemphasize folks that live there. PEMA Director Randy Padfield said, you know, even about your medical appointments on the day of the eclipse, make sure you are aware that this might not work in your favor on this day.
Yeah, we're telling everybody you need to pack patience if you're going to try to travel that day, because even a short commute could take quite a bit longer. So it's going to be congested, especially immediately after the eclipse. So and with all of our partnerships and our planning, what we've learned is that a lot of folks will trickle in over time. So it'll start coming in about Friday, but it will really ramp up Monday morning. But what happens afterwards is that most people want to leave at almost the same time. So that's when things are going to get very heavy on the roadways. So if you can plan to stay in place after the eclipse, you know, already have activities to do, make sure you bring snacks, water, other things you might need, such as medications, and just know that the travel home might take longer and likely will take longer than the travel there.
The path of the eclipse, the path of the eclipse will impact Pennsylvania starting at about 2, and then at approximately 3:16 to 3:20. Totality occurs in the Northwest region, and then the eclipse concludes at approximately 4:30. So that's the guidance there for that time frame. But again, all day long might be impacted by all the travel. Pennsylvania State Police taking a very firm stance about public safety and also about speed limits and zero tolerance for intoxication.
Yeah, we want everybody to celebrate safely. And I think another thing to note is that the state police are going to be sweeping around our interstates here up in the Northwest region to make sure there aren't any abandoned vehicles along the roadways, because they want to make sure that everything is cleaned up so our emergency vehicles can get to places, you know, so there's space on the shoulder for people to pull off as needed and things like that. So it's been a real coordinated effort across state agencies and across the state itself.
You guys seem like you're really prepared. There's also some state parks holding educational programs leading up to the eclipse. There's the DCNR's website, 2024 Total Solar Eclipse page as well at their website. And again, we should take this moment to remind folks that if you're viewing that eclipse outdoors, you should have some of these safety items as well.
Glasses are very important if you're going to be looking at the eclipse, especially if you're not in the path of totality during that totality moment. You can take them off. Otherwise, you should have them on, but not while you're driving. So we really want to emphasize that you don't need to be wearing your eclipse glasses while you're driving. And whether you come the whole way up to the Northwest region or you stay at home over on the other side of the state, you will notice a difference in the level of light outside during the eclipse. So don't think that it's only going to affect you if you come to Erie, because the entire state is covered will be impacted by the eclipse just to a different level.
Yep, same thing in New York. And also, you mentioned earlier about being prepared, bring water, snacks, or a meal if you're going to be viewing it outside, appropriate layers for sun, cold, rain, snow, who knows, because given the last day or two, bug repellent, camp chairs, you know, necessary medications if you're going to be out and about, because again, there are going to be a lot of people visiting in the area, and things are going to slow down a little bit, so be prepared. Urinary, as I said, do you have a eclipse plan for yourself?
My eclipse plan is to be working, but I'll be up in Erie County, luckily, to do that work, so I will hopefully get a chance to step outside and experience the totality. I've never done that before, so I'm kind of excited about that and the idea of experiencing a once-in-a-lifetime thing for our region, because it won't be coming through again up here in this part of Pennsylvania in my lifetime. So that's a pretty exciting thing for me. I know that there's a lot of other folks from our region who are also traveling up into Erie County because they're recognizing that opportunity as well. So it should be a fun day as long as everybody remembers that they just need to be patient on their way home and come prepared to spend a little extra time in Erie County.
Yeah, exactly. And let's remind folks where they can get traveler information and also visitor information, any other resources for viewing the eclipse that you and your partner agencies have been putting out.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So recognizing that a lot of people are coming to Erie County who may have never been to our area before, we created a special 511PA.com page specifically for this event. So 511PA.com/eclipse24. And that will show you travel times up into Erie. It also helps you with some of those other things to prepare for, like if you're driving an electric vehicle, know where the charging stations are, because they sometimes be few and far between up here in our region. So you'll find all that kind of information on the map as well. Don't wait until you get to Erie to do those kinds of things. So come with your battery charged, your tank full, and come with a lot of patience.
And there's also the Visit Erie Eclipse 2024 page. Of course, the resources are always available at the PennDOT page on your Facebook group as well, and on X, where you can also get traffic updates all the time, right?
Yes.
Okay. Jill Harry from PennDOT joining us from Erie, which is going to be in the path of totality for the upcoming eclipse, and reminding folks, the visitors and motorists, plan ahead. Be patient. Don't park on those highways or rest stops. Jill, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we'll take a break. And when we come back, a 4-H teen tractor safety program. It's starting tomorrow in Ulster County. We'll learn more right after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Matt Hurtado. Join me on a journey where pixels meet melodies and controllers become conductors. This is Virtual Soundscapes, the show that transports you to the sonic realms of video game magic. In this journey, we'll uncover the hidden treasures of video game soundtracks from the classics to modern day, and speak with industry veterans. Join me every Thursday night at 10 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we've got the beloved video star, recipe developer, and best-selling cookbook author, Sola El Whaley. Spend the hour with her talking about her inspirations, and we answer your cooking questions. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11, on Radio Catskill.
The Sullivan County Board of Elections is seeking to hire elections inspectors at a rate of $300 per day. Prerequisites include U.S. citizenship, voter registration in Sullivan County, English fluency, and willingness to work with the public on behalf of the Democratic or Republican Party from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. on election days. Payment for training is available at $40. More information by calling the Board of Elections at 845-807-0400. Paid for by Sullivan County Government.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. 4-H Youth Development at Cornell Cooperative Extension in Ulster County is hosting a 4-H Teen Tractor Safety Program starting tomorrow through April 27th.
The instructor, Grant DeWitt, is an Ulster County 4-H alumnus who holds a degree in agricultural engineering from SUNY Cobleskill and is a former qualifier at the national level in the 4-H tractor operation contest. He's joining us this morning. Mr. DeWitt, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. How are you today?
We're good. Thanks for being here. So can you tell folks, what is the Teen Tractor Safety Program all about, and how does it coincide or work with the National Safe Tractor and Machinery Operation Program?
Yeah, good morning. Well, what we do is we keep kids safe and show them about all the accident situations and things we could have and how to avoid all of those situations.
Yeah, so at the National Safe Tractor and Machinery Operation Program is what you use to enable these young workers to obtain a Department of Labor certificate of training. And is that something someone needs to be able to operate a tractor or equipment on a farm?
It does. Anytime you're hired as a 14 or 15-year-old, the Department of Labor has defined operating a tractor over 20 horsepower as a hazardous occupation. So in order to be able to be employed by somebody, you would need a tractor safety course.
So folks are required to have that certificate to work on the farm and be certified. What are kind of some of the safety skills that students learn in these programs for us folks who have never driven a tractor before? What are some of those things?
We'll go over the tractor itself, older tractors, newer tractors. Some of the safety features that are on the new tractors versus really what's on the old tractors, which are very few. We'll show them all the older tractor hazards, and then we'll look at how the new tractor have a lot of new safety features, which we can avoid some of those hazards. And then we'll also go over personal protective equipment like hearing protection and such things that the older farmers never really paid attention to.
And then, you know, you mentioned these older tractors. You would, I guess sometimes when you think about a tractor, a lot of people that are listening might think of like, you know, a lawnmower or something. It's kind of, you just get on and you go. But this is considered a bigger piece of hazardous equipment. What are some of the intricacies of a tractor that folks need to realize?
Well, the power takeoff shaft on the back, which drives our rotary mowers and tillers, post hole diggers, and a whole host of other attachments, is very dangerous. And if you look, most of the operators' manuals nowadays, they go over all these different accident situations that people have had in the past. So we'll go over all those, and we'll look at what the operators' manual says and how to safely use those tools.
You mentioned the older tractors versus the newer tractors. Are there some technological developments that you might not expect to have on a more modern tractor that folks aren't aware of?
Yeah, the older tractors and equipment, maybe we'll talk about power takeoff shafts, how they're not shielded properly on some of that older equipment and how some of that's changed, as well as how the PTO operates and the levers and controls, such as seat switches on a new tractor that'll shut the power takeoff off when you get out of the seat, versus older tractors, they'll just stay on.
And we mentioned in the introduction that you've been teaching this class for a while. You hold a degree in agricultural engineering. You're an Ulster County 4-H alumnus. But the one thing that was really interesting to me was the 4-H tractor operation contest. You qualified there at the national level. What is the 4-H tractor operation contest?
Okay, that contest is based around proper maintenance of a tractor, knowing different parts of the tractor and how to safely and efficiently operate that tractor. And we also talk about how fast we can do stuff, we're efficient. And then we also look at different types of machinery, such as a wagon, two-wheel wagons, four-wheel wagons, and how they're used in farming and maybe landscaping.
Did we lose you there?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Gosh, I thought we dropped we've been having some phone problems. So I'm glad you're still there. So you mentioned landscaping as well. We talked about farming, but these safety skills and operating a tractor are also good for students who might seek employment in other kinds of businesses. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, nowadays the farming industry, as you know, has kind of really gotten a lot lower amount of kids growing up on farms like we used to have. But now there's a lot of compact tractors that are grown, kids have gotten on and doing a lot of different operations, such as landscaping, moving a lot of different materials around, such as we're using a lot of forks and loader tractors.
And you've mentioned that fewer farmers, so you're seeing fewer students. How important is it for the ones that are still there to gain this information and continue on this tradition?
It's definitely important to gain it. Even though we have a lot of newer tractors that have safety features, we still have to show them all the skills and how to avoid accident situations. And I like to pass on all the years and years of experience that I have myself and the other colleagues that help teach the course.
You mentioned those again, those years and years of experience. And as a 4-H alumnus, I wanted to just ask you why, you know, 4-H is so important, especially in your community.
We've had that program for a long, long time. And again, our old community had a lot of farms in it, a lot of farm kids. And we'd like to just keep that tradition going and keep people safe and kids safe around farm machinery.
And that safety program is starting tomorrow, and it runs through April 27th at the 4-H Youth Development at Cornell Cooperative Extension, Ulster County. There's more information about that on their website and Facebook page. Mr. DeWitt, anything else you want to let folks know about 4-H in Ulster County or the Teen Tractor Safety Program before we let you go?
No, I think we covered everything. But if anybody's still interested in the program, you can come right up till tomorrow night, and we'll get you registered and glad to have you.
All right. That is Grant DeWitt. He's an Ulster County 4-H alumnus, and he is teaching the 4-H Teen Tractor Safety Program at Cornell Cooperative Extension, Ulster County. Mr. DeWitt, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for the work you're doing for our young farmers.
Anytime. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll take a break, and when we come back, voting for the World Video Game Hall of Fame. And we'll talk to someone who worked on one of the games that was previously inducted into the Hall of Fame. This is Radio Chatskill.
We are moving now.
Electric bikes are everywhere. They are quiet and very fast. Teens ride them on the roads, in bike lanes, but also in places they should not be, like sidewalks and parks.
Look out!
When you ride, wear a helmet. Don't speed. Watch out for pedestrians and cars. New York State and your community have specific rules for electric bikes. Follow them. Go to trafficsafety.ny.gov for more info. A message brought to you by the Governor's Traffic Safety Committee.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
The Daily draws on the unrivaled quality and expertise of the New York Times Global Newsroom of almost 1,500 journalists. Our mission is to tell stories more deeply and to incorporate a new kind of transparency into the way those stories are told. I'm Michael Barbaro, host of The Daily. Join us for a thoughtful and human look inside the most important stories of the day. Weekday evenings at 6:30 here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every year since 2015, the Strong National Museum of Play in Rochester honors pioneering games in their World Video Game Hall of Fame. Past inductees have included the legendary Pac-Man. This year's edition has 12 nominees, including Metroid, SimCity, and Neopets. Public voting is underway to decide which four will be selected in May. On his Radio Catskill show, Virtual Soundscapes, Matt Hurtado not only features music from video games, he also interviews video game industry professionals. He spoke to Kari Toyama, who worked at Bungie and PopCap Games, two previous inductees into the Video Game Hall of Fame.
Tonight I'm joined by hockey player, video game producer, and Peggle 2 voice actress, Kari Toyama. Kari, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So, Carrie, let's get started. Can you tell me what sparked your interest in video games and how that led into a career in the industry?
Yeah, so I've been playing video games my whole life, like a lot of people in the industry, since I was a little kid. The first video game I ever played was Mike Tyson's Punch-Out on, I think it was the NES. I don't think it was a Super NES, but correct me if I'm wrong. And I was in somebody's like basement, like my babysitter's basement, and her nephew was playing it with us, and it was, you know, we didn't win, but my brother and I had a blast, and we played video games ever since together. But what actually led me into the industry was kind of an accident. I was in college and studying to have like a psychology degree. And I wasn't quite sure what I was doing yet, as many young people don't know. And I had a job that was a night shift job at a grocery store, price changer. And I worked all night, and then I couldn't like go to sleep at 5 a.m. when I got home. And so I started, playing Halo 2, and I realized that there was like this whole community of people like on the internet that were getting together and playing these Halo and other games as well. And I started like getting interested in that community, and that community led me to realize that the developer of Halo, which was Bungie at the time, they were in my neighborhood, and I didn't even realize that people made video games near me. So, being from the community, that's how I realized like, oh, I could like, there's actual jobs that these people can have, and I could like do this for a living. And so that's kind of like what led me into the game industry in the first place. And it was honestly just through people and being in community with people that liked a thing that I liked. So
what was your, can you tell me a little bit about what your first job was at Bungie?
Yeah, I was a build verification tester, which is, and it was a contract job, just like many test and QA jobs were at the time, and honestly still are too. And so I had a 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. shift, and my job was, and there was like about 20 of us on the team, I believe. And my job was to go in super early and basically do like a smoke test on the build. So we basically would just like run through the game and just make sure nothing was like super broken, like you could actually play the game, so that the developers who came in later that morning wouldn't have any problems, you know, working on the game. There was nothing blocking them from continuing their work. So that's what I did every morning.
It's amazing. What's your favorite memory of your, I mean, either from that job or just any of your jobs in your career?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this, and I have so many, but one of the first ones, and they're all around like learning moments for me, but one early one that I thought of was, you know, I was working on Halo 3, that same job. I actually like had sort of worked my way up. I got promoted a couple of times at Bungie. And I was like an area owner tester, so that I kind of like created test plans for how to test certain areas of the game that I owned. And then I would, you know, work with a team to, you know, execute on those plans. So I had been playing the game a lot. Like, you know, the public hadn't seen it yet. They've seen some previews, and there, you know, there was like, you know, some trailers and things that went out, but no one had actually seen the gameplay of the game yet. But I had a lot every single day for hours and hours. I had to play the same things over and over again to make sure that they worked properly. And to be honest with you, I was like over it at that point. I was like, this game is cool, but I'm pretty tired of playing it. And we were heading out to PAX, which is a convention out here in Seattle. It's, you know, pretty much worldwide now, but at the time it was only in Seattle, and they had a segment, where they basically had these people like competing with each other. And at the very end, if they got to the very end, they'd be able to like play a surprise game against each other. And then whoever won that surprise game would win. And the surprise game was Halo 3, which is the game I was working on. And, you know, people were like, this is so cool. They don't know that they're going to get to play this, and they're going to make it a big deal. They had it in this like theater, this like sort of theater setting. And I went to the event, And I was like, kind of, I remember rolling my eyes being like, who cares? I've been playing this game. Like, it's not going to be that cool, you know, to watch these people. Like, it'll be kind of exciting to see their reactions. But I was like, kind of over it at that point. And I will never forget, like, they, you know, did this whole production where they're like, get ready, the surprise game is, and they like flashed, you know, the Halo 3 symbol on the screen, and the crowd just like lost it. And the music started pumping from the game, and, you know, it like flashed on the screen, and like the two people who were about to play it were like losing their minds, and like, you know, lights were everywhere. And it was just like the most incredible moment. And I had heard that music so many times. You know, when you play, when you work on a game, you get so sick of, like, especially the opening music, it gets really tiring. And I heard that music and like my heart just like stopped. I just like was so excited. And I remember, I always remember this moment, because I remember that there's, no matter how hard you work on something, and like, you know, maybe you're just like really stressed and tired and you're not even sure if people are going to like it, there's always going to be a moment like that in the games that you work on. And every single game I've worked on since has had that moment where I realize, like, people are really going to love this thing that I'm working on, and I'm doing it for a reason, and it's like a really big deal. And so, yeah, that was one of my favorite moments working in games.
That sounds super awesome. That's really rewarding.
Yeah.
So you've had an incredible career, Carrie. You started off, you know, as a build test engineer, which is, you know, part of a greater QA department, and you went on to champion QA and diversity in games, you know, with your work at Private Division, where you basically built the QA department there. Can you elaborate on why QA and diversity are such crucial aspects of the game development industry?
Yeah, of course. I love talking about this, and I love it when people ask me about it, because I think it's like really important for people to speak up when they, especially for those who like don't have, you know, as big as a voice. And I certainly didn't have one when I was, you know, younger and first started in the industry. So, I mean, you know, to briefly sort of talk about why I even care about these things in the first place is because of my experience in video games. You know, I, you know, talking about how I loved working on Halo, and I was so excited to work, you know, on Halo 3 when I, you know, broke into the industry. But it was really tough for me. I was always the only woman in the room. You know, I was super young. I think I was 22 when I started. So, you know, I'm still like, you know, basically a child. Like, I'm just learning how to be an adult at this point. And I was, you know, in an industry that I didn't know. And it was a professional, you know, setting that I wasn't, you know, really familiar with. And I wanted to keep my job. I really enjoyed what I was doing. And because of that, I had a lot of experiences that today, if I were to experience them, they were very negative, and I would speak up today in a heartbeat. But at the time, I didn't know. I felt like, if I spoke up, for myself, then, they would just fire me. And I think a lot of people, you know, felt like that. And I saw that happen to people. So I was like, I want to stay here, and I would like to continue working on this really cool game. And I think I really like this job. And so, you know, there were multiple reasons why, you know, I was treated the way I was. But a lot of them were because, you know, I was a woman, and that, coming to that realization, it took me a long, long time to come to that realization. I didn't really understand what was going on until I was a lot older, and sort of like could take a step back and look at what had happened to me, with a different sort of like setting. And then I realized, that I always had this sort of fire in me. Like, I wasn't going to just like, you know, let this happen to other people, for surely not the other people. Like, you know, I sort of have like learned to like have thick skin, but then I realized, like, watching it happen to other people around me, I was like, no, this isn't the way. This isn't the way that it should be. So I really started to, speak up. And when I started to speak up, what I realized was that people weren't firing me because I was really good at my job. And I was dedicated, and I was all those buzzwords. I was a team player. You know, I worked hard. You know, I was always there, and I did really good work. So they didn't want to fire me. And 'cause otherwise they would lose a really good you know, person that they worked with. So I started to speak up more and started little by little. It didn't happen overnight. Kind of had to pick my battles. By the time I became, sort of like senior, had a senior role in the industry, which took, I would say like about like 7 years to have like a real, or to feel like I was truly in a senior role. That was at the point where I was like, I am going to make this my mission at this point. So I'm going to continue to do my work and love my job and, you know, be a team player, but I'm also not going to, I'm not going to turn away from, you know, from these issues that I feel like the industry has, and a lot of industries have them. But, you know, I was like, this is the one that I like, and I want to stay here, and I want to make a difference. Even if it's a small difference, I'm still going to do it. So I basically, you know, continue to speak up. And the thing that I like to do personally, and not everybody likes to do this, but I personally like to take what I call a sort of like grassroots approach to diversity and inclusion. And that means that I don't necessarily need this big a program, or I don't need like, you know, I don't need like a lot of buy-in from stakeholders and things like that. I know I'm losing a lot of buzzwords, but that's what they are. You know, a lot of people think that they need to have a whole program in order to get things done. Especially in this space. For me, I like to start with like, hey, what's going on here on a personal level? And work with people around me who are maybe are facing these issues or things that I have faced in the past, and then sort of like go from there. And when we take it step by step, one thing at a time.
That is Carrie Toyama, who has worked at video game manufacturers Bungie and PopCap Games, two previous inductees into the Video Game Hall of Fame, talking to our own Matt Hurtado. Matt hosts the show Virtual Soundscapes right here on Radio Catskill on Thursdays at 10, all about the music of video games. And also, he features industry professionals like Carrie. You can also hear his previous interviews with those video game professionals on a podcast we developed for Virtual Soundscapes. That's at wjffradio.org. Also, if you want to vote on the 2024 World Video Game Hall of Fame finalists, you can visit museumofplay.org. Quick break for us, and then a quick update on the New York State budget. This is Radio Catskill.
I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m. only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It's Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. An update on New York State's budget. Democrats who control the New York State legislature are expressing some hope that, unlike last year, an on-time budget could be in place when the new fiscal year starts April 1st. Yes, you heard that right. After the Assembly and Senate released their own budget plans last week, negotiations with Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul are ramping up. Assembly Speaker Carl Heastie of the Bronx told reporters Monday that his conference is optimistic.
I think for us, we had a great opening conversation today. I think things are going well in our discussions, and I think we should be able to get to a good place and have an on-time budget.
And Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins of Westchester County agrees.
We are hopeful. You know, we are always trying to make sure that we have a fiscally responsible, balanced, on-time budget, and so we are going to be working towards that, obviously.
With Easter Sunday falling on March 31st, lawmakers are currently scheduled to leave Albany on the 28th, adding to that time crunch. We'll keep you posted. That's all for this edition of Radio Catskill. Tomorrow on the show, Wayne County Commissioner Jocelyn Kramer joins us live to break down that special election and the primary in Pennsylvania coming up on April 23rd. Some folks might see the ballot for the state rep of the 139th district on their ballot twice, and we'll explain why tomorrow with Jocelyn Kramer from Wayne County. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Trout season is kicking off in Trout Town, USA. The first cast at the Junction Pool in Roscoe is April 1st. The 63rd Annual Two-Headed Trout Dinner, April 6th at Rockland House, featuring live local music, dancing, awards, speakers, a raffle, and a silent auction. And throughout the Two-Headed Trout Weekend, April 5th, 6th, and 7th, Roscoe businesses have trout-themed events and promotions. More information at roscoeny.com. Paid for by the Roscoe-Rockland Chamber of Commerce.
I'm Orca Werman. Each day on The World, we step outside our borders to hear what's going on around the planet and to hear how events in the United States are seen across Africa, Europe, Asia, and the Americas. Our producers and reporters dig deep to find stories that connect you with what's happening worldwide. That's why we call it The World. Join us. Afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. A special weather statement from the National Weather Service for today. Dangerous snow squalls are possible late this morning and into the afternoon across central New York and northeast Pennsylvania. Snow squalls are expected to develop across western New York and northwest Pennsylvania later this morning and then move across all of central New York and northeastern PA from late this morning into the afternoon. This will make very dangerous travel, especially on interstates, the New York Thruway and the Pennsylvania Turnpike and other highways. The snow squalls will reach northeast Pennsylvania and the western Catskills between 3 and 5 p.m. This includes all the interstates in northeast Pennsylvania, including I-81, I-80, I-84, I-380, and the northeast extension of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. If you're planning travel today, best to get off at the nearest exit or avoid travel until these snow squalls pass. Again, the National Weather Service issuing a special weather statement. Dangerous snow squalls possible late this morning into the afternoon across central New York and northeast Pennsylvania. The rest of today, rather cloudy with some snow showers up to an inch. Mainly later, as we mentioned, the snow squalls moving into the area between 3 and 5. Breezy this afternoon. The high of 40 tonight, cloudy, a few snow showers again up to an inch, and then we will see a low of 18. Windy with times of clouds and sun tomorrow, a high near 30.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Women's Health Center, a Wayne Memorial Community Health Center, physicians and certified midwives who deliver, with offices in Honesdale, Hamlin, Carbondale, and Dingman's Ferry in Pennsylvania. More information at WMCHC.net. And from the River Reporter newspaper, riverreporter.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Support comes from Grizzly Bagels. Small batch, handmade, New York-style bagels in Calicoon, New York. Available for pre-order or in-person pickup. GrizzlyBagels.com.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskill's new show, Electric Mountain. I play the best of dance music from back in the day to today, and every week I'll feature a guest DJ spinning a continuous set, bringing their unique style. Come dance with us on Electric Mountain each and every Saturday night, 12 to 2, exclusively on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello, Radio Catskill, on your radio at 90.5 FM or streaming online at WJFFradio.org.